Truth, Mimes, and Puppy Tales. Copyright Matthew Barron, 2024. Originally published in Leadership Gone Right from Farthest Star Publishing, April 2024. This news feed excerpt from Wilma Watkins' autobiography is sponsored by Blue Panels. When the grid goes down, you'll have peace of mind with Blue Panels brand solar equipment. Blue Panels produce that even current that can't be matched by other brands. When the neighbors see your lights on, they will know you were smart enough to invest in Skip Ad. I peeked past the curtain at the audience. The hotel staff had folded away separating walls, creating a huge space, and a chandelier glowed above the crowd. Every seat was full, at least in the front rows. Men and women stood in the aisles, too, unable to find seats. The free snacks had been a good lure. Discordant voices created a constant buzz underneath the speaker standing at the podium. This was the kind of crowd I loved, not the stuffy elites and insiders of most great party functions. George beamed at me. He had started with me as an intern years ago, and youthful hope still glowed in his blue eyes. "They're all here for you, Miss Watkins. How many times do I have to say it? It's Wilma. No one from Hoosierland Province has made it this far since... Don't even say his name. Sorry." George nudged the curtain aside and gazed at the audience. "They look unruly. I wish we would have brought our own security." "Nonsense. Great Party already has too many guards. They stalk around the room and loom in front of the stage like soldiers, keeping us separated from the people. Once everyone hears what we've accomplished back home, and see the images of our beautiful province, they'll know we can do the same thing for the rest of the country. Your numbers are skyrocketing. Polls are what the party cares about." The man at the podium said my name. I took a deep breath. "That's my cue." I waved to the crowd as I paced to the podium. Not too fast, but not too slow. Everything had to be measured and confident, even though my heart was racing. My black hair was perfectly coiffed, and the yellow jacket and skirt complemented my brown skin. We were really going to do it. If I got elected director, my team and I would rebuild America and make the country even better than before. Someone in the audience barked like a dog. Every audience had one heckler. A few cheers popped out when my banner was released with our slogan, "Wilma will do it." Someone giggled. I began talking about what we had accomplished in Hoosierland, rebuilding and rebranding a provincial police force, forming coalitions of groups who historically hated each other, using those coalitions to reestablish the basic functions of government and trust in that government. Someone booed. Another person barked, "Killer!" I paused, but continued my speech. Behind me, images of clean streets and smiling faces glowed over the audience. We haven't had a single murder in over a year, and basic health care is now available all over the province, even in rural areas. "Disgusting!" another shouted. "Animal murderer!" A water bottle flew through the air, barely missing my head. The audience moved like a massive amoeba toward the stage, engulfing and digesting a security guard. I was too stunned to move, unsure what I was seeing. George rushed from the wings to my side, eyes wide with shock. A boy climbed the curtains, swinging and laughing. A guard rushed George and I stage left as the audience climbed onto the platform. The projection screen fell and tore underneath the crowd's onslaught. My guard fell behind, pulled away and buried. Hands tore at my suit jacket. "This way!" Another guard in dark goggles grabbed my arm and pulled me down a back corridor in the bowels of the hotel. Two more guards slammed a heavy door and held it shut against the push of the crowd. "George!" I cried, unable to see my assistant any longer. "Where is George?"
"You'll meet up with him later," my guardian said. "He's not the one they're after."
We exited onto a dirt-encrusted loading dock under a gray sky. The guard shoved me in back of a polished black Humvee and slammed the door shut.
The silver-haired man sitting beside me said, "Drive!" And the vehicle jetted forward, weaving around protesters and bystanders. I tried to catch my breath. Smoke rose from the hotel behind us. My God! I furrowed my brow. What was that about? You haven't seen newsfeed in the last few minutes, have you? The Humvee bounced over giant potholes and veered around mounds of trash. For the first time, I looked at the man beside me and recognized the scar on his cheek. "Let me out," I demanded. "That would be a very bad idea. We've got accommodations at the Grand, 12 blocks away. You'll be safe there." "I am grateful for your help, but I can't be seen with you." Albert Sloan's chest shook with laughter. "I'm the least of your problems." I scowled. "You were the great hope. You were going to put it all back together. I supported you. I loved you, and then..."
"I've been watching you. You know, your platform is almost exactly the same as mine was. But you are really doing the things I only talked about. I admire you."
"I don't need or want your admiration." He handed me a tablet.
"You think I'm bad? Maybe my reputation will be damaged if I'm seen with you."
I scowled at the headline featured on the screen. "Watkins eats puppies."
"What is this?"
"Keep reading."
"It's ridiculous. No one could take this seriously."
"They have photos."
I scrolled down to a photo of me walking Tabby, my cute little Yorkie. Back home, she had been even more popular than me. That's just me walking my dog. The entire province had mourned with me when she passed away.
"So you say? There's more."
I clicked a link and found scans of an alleged recipe book stolen from my kitchen.
"Gross! No one will believe this absurdity."
"You believed it about me."
"That's different."
"How?"
You were... I hesitated. "There were photographs."
Sloan raised an eyebrow and nodded toward the tablet.
"I didn't just trust one article. You were all over newsfeed."
I shrank into my seat, momentarily unable to distinguish what was real and what wasn't. I shook it off. Sloan was trying to trick me.
"This won't last," I said. "Tomorrow is another day, and sanity will reign."
"That's exactly what I said. Call me when you're ready to fight back."
The vehicle jerked to a stop in front of a grimy wall mounted with cameras. I opened the door and handed the tablet back.
"You keep it," Sloan said.
Once through the wall, I found myself in a posh hotel lobby that smelled of chlorine from a pool hidden somewhere within the walls. Soft Muzak played overhead. George hollered my name, and I wrapped my arms around him. He was bruised up, but otherwise all right. I pulled back suddenly, appalled at my action.
"I'm so sorry. That was very unprofessional."
"It's fine," he said, "considering what we just went through.
I was so worried when I lost you." "Do you know what that was all about?" I asked.
"I'm afraid there was a rumor going around."
I pushed the tablet into his chest.
"Puppies! You are supposed to be on top of these things. This should not have been a surprise."
I marched up to the reception desk, and he followed close behind, scanning through the article.
"It just popped up on the feeds this morning, when we were prepping for your speech. Oh, I haven't seen this one. Looks older. Maybe this is the original."
I paused, and he almost bumped into me. "There's more than one?" He froze, staring like a deer caught in my headlights.
"Yes, Miss Watkins. Wilma..."
My mouth tightened.
"Miss Watkins is fine. I'm so sorry."
When George realized I was stopping at the hotel reception desk, he motioned toward the elevators.
"We've already got you all set up in a suite."
The elevator dinged, and I said, "There is really more than one article devoted to this ridiculousness?"
"They've been spreading all morning. It's almost the exact same article, but posted in different feeds with different headlines, so it seems like it is coming from more than one source." Do people have nothing better to do than read this trash? Who started this? The article you showed me was posted on a ProPalma site, but copycats are popping up everywhere. I hissed. Counselor Brock Palma. Of course. Palma was Better Party's candidate for the directorship. He'd been a provincial representative since the People's Revolution. Until now, he hadn't been paying attention to us. Your rise in the polls must have taken him by surprise. Well, he's taking us seriously now. It's fine. We still have the luncheon tomorrow, and, well, I'm afraid the luncheon's been canceled. What? The evening roundtable, too. Great Party said we'll be invited again, if we can get your poll numbers back up. Great Party had no shortage of candidates to lift up if I dropped away. There were currently 120 people running for director, but the party endorsement went a long way. Newsfeed normally narrowed down the candidates until only two or sometimes three got any sustainable attention. Well, then I guess there is no reason to stay in Capital City, I said. We've got some damage control to do. Don't be glum, George. We've got the truth on our side. My campaign bus made its way into downtown Circle City, with my slogan emblazoned on the side. Golden sunlight beamed on newly cleaned buildings without a speck of graffiti. I'd like to take credit for it, but it was the good people of Hoosierland who came together and cleaned all this up. I whipped out a digital recorder and archived the humble thought for a future speech. At an intersection, men and women gathered around a scarecrow-like figure made of straw. Plastic dog ears flapped over the sides of their hats, and they dressed the straw person in a yellow skirt suit. When they saw us, they barked and set the figure ablaze.
Burner! I heard them shout. Burner up!
George stuck his hand out the window and flipped them the middle finger. I pulled his hand back. That's not a dignified response.
But they are so... So...
The bus pulled away from the intersection, and I left the burning effigy behind us. Your reaction reflects on me, George. The burners are right to fear me. In the eastern provinces, community militias burn real people, not just straw. Anyone who goes against their taboos is a target. The burners are terrified. My administration will put an end to that, and you know damn well it will. George fumed. Where did they get all those dog hats from so quickly? They must have heard the rumor before the articles hit newsfeed. Outside the chairman's mansion, a group of children held dogs on leashes. I was so touched. They had done the same thing after Tabby's funeral. I disembarked and kneeled down to talk to the kids and pet their puppies, while proud mothers beamed in the background with their cameras snapping photos. My people knew me. They would not be fooled by some silly news feed. I addressed the bloggers on the lawn. Of course they asked about the ridiculous news feed stories. I laughed off their questions and withdrew to the mansion. I had real work to do, and didn't have time for such childishness. I addressed George as we entered the outer office, where my staff worked at their desks. I'm going to freshen up, and then we'll head over to the animal shelter for that photo op. I'm afraid the shelter canceled.
What? Why? It's great press for them as well as me.
George wavered, and I feared he might cry.
It's all right, George. It's not your fault. Tell me what happened.
They said they don't want to be associated with you.
I helped fund that damned shelter.
George handed me a tablet with an image captured mere minutes ago in front of the mansion, with all the cute little dogs and children. The caption read, Chairman Watkins selects her next meal. I released an angry shriek and threw the tablet against the floor. The entire room froze.
No one in Hoosierland has championed animals and pets more than me.
I marched to my office and slammed the door to hide my shame and embarrassment. I wanted to weep. As if losing my cool didn't look bad enough. Imagine what people would say if I, a woman, cried. A woman couldn't afford to show that kind of weakness, no matter how justified her feelings were. At least I had only lost my temper in front of my staff. If I'd lost control like that in public, it would have ended my career and all my hopes for the country. George knocked on the door. I always recognized his gentle knock. "I hope you don't mind," George said. "I've prepared a press release, highlighting all the policies you've put in place to help animals in the province." "That's good. That's very good, George. Thank you." The office suddenly went silent. George and I spotted Sloane standing in the center of the outer office. He leaned both hands on the silver cane in front of him, and his feet locked together side by side, making his body resemble an exclamation point. "Are you ready to accept my help now?" he asked. "You came all this way," I said. "I suppose it doesn't hurt to hear what you have to say." I invited Sloane into my office with George and me. My staff finally started moving again, and I shut the door. George whispered, "Who let him out of his cave? You can't seriously be considering working with him." "The world isn't as black and white as I thought it was, George. Let's hear him out." Sloane slapped a manila folder on the desk as he sat opposite me. He handed me a blurry photo of my rival, Brock Palma, with his palms facing forward. "I don't get it," I said. "What am I looking at?"
"You don't see it?"
"He's pushing against an invisible wall." George hovered behind me and squinted at the photo. "What?" I asked. Sloane tossed another photo at me. What looked like a very young Palma held a drink in his hand and was dressed as some kind of clown.
"You still don't see it?" Sloane asked. "Palma is a mime."
George and I stared at Sloane with open mouths.
"He didn't just experiment in college. I've got an interview with his former maid, verifying he receives jars of white makeup. And boom!"
He whipped out another blurry photo of Palma, now reaching both hands forward, palms up.
"Pulling an invisible rope."
I shook my head. "Is this even real?"
"It might be."
"So it's a lie."
"It doesn't matter. No one wants a mime for their director. Can you imagine?"
"Get out," I said.
"George, prepare the press release." "You still think press releases will stop this?" Sloane asked. "You have to fight fire with fire."
"I don't play that way, Mr. Sloane."
"Then you will lose, the same way I lost. You can't grow flowers without a little manure. The people don't care about truth or sound policy. They want sensationalism. They want scandal. You and I want the same things, Ms. Watkins. To get what we want, we need to play the game."
I stared at him in mute horror, wondering how anyone could see humanity so cynically.
"Very well."
He left the folder and his business card on the desk. After signing off on George's press release, I spent the rest of the afternoon making calls and going over emails. The low sun cast strips of shadow through the window blinds when George returned.
"It will be dark soon," George said.
"We can work as late as we like. The lights never go off in the chairman's mansion ever since I had blue panels installed.
But aren't you worried about dirty power ruining our sensitive electronics? My neighbor saved a lot of money by buying off-brand solar batteries, but a month later, she had to replace all her appliances."
"We don't need to worry about that with blue panels, George. Blue panels provide a clean, consistent current that can't be matched by other brands."
"That's a relief."
George, never one to actually shirk work, winked with a cheesy grin.
"I guess there's no getting out of working late tonight. Thanks a lot, blue panels."
We both chuckled. George checked the stats. No one had watched my interview. Meanwhile, hundreds of negative videos and stories sprang up about me eating pets, each gorier and more ridiculous than the next. One video in particular was being continuously watched and shared, adding up to millions of views. Dark, feminine hands, evidently supposed to be mine, had strapped a giant bun around a big-eyed dachshund and began squirting condiments on it. My own hands hadn't been that smooth since I'd been a teenager. Yakety Sax, the Benny Hill theme, played in the background while the dog tried to squirm free of the bun and licked ketchup off its short, ruddy fur. Someone even posted a photo of me as a small child with Snuffles, my very first dog, who was ominously never seen again after it died of natural causes at the age of 13. Very old for a dog.
"Quite a coincidence," a commentator said, "that all these dogs keep dying around Chairman Watkins."
"You've done all you can for today, George. Get some rest." He nodded with downturned eyes and solemn lips. "Is something wrong, George?" He shrugged. "What is it?" Without meeting my eyes, he asked, "What did happen to Tabby?" "What do you mean?" "You used to bring him to the office all the time, but then one day you just stopped." "Tabby had cancer. You know this. I was gone from the office for a week. I was heartbroken when I got back. Everyone knows this. You most of all, because you were here." "That's what you said. How do I know that for sure?" "How could you even ask that? There was absolutely no evidence that I ever hurt a pet." "But there isn't any evidence you didn't eat Tabby either." My hands clenched into fists. "You need to leave." He paused and met my eyes before finally turning away and walking out the door. I let my head fall onto the desk. Did he really think I was capable of such a thing? Could seeing so many of these awful stories all day long have brainwashed him, like it had so many others? It was bad enough to have strangers think I did this, but George, too? This had gone too far. I picked up the phone and dialed Sloan. "What do you need from me to get this done?" The office hummed the next morning. My staff laughed and chuckled at the images of Palma trapped in an invisible box. "Such a great metaphor," George said. "Right?" No one was talking about me or dogs. Sloan released the images and interviews one at a time, letting them trickle out and spread organically as they were shared by different commentators and bloggers around Newsfeed. Palma's poll numbers dipped below mine. My numbers bumped up negligibly, but we were nowhere near where we were previously. Around noon, a new negative video circulated of George flipping the bird out the window of my campaign bus. In several of the feeds, the image had been color-corrected to make his hand as dark as mine. A commentator opined, "Can we afford a director so out of control that she insults patriotic protesters who are merely exercising their right to free speech? Now that she is no longer the newsfeed darling she used to be, we are finally seeing the real Wilma Watkins. Insiders tell me that as director, she would actually restrict negative posts about her on newsfeed, corrupting the very heart of our society. If we allow her to destroy our trust in newsfeed, how could we trust anything?" I couldn't imagine anyone really censoring newsfeed. Part of its tremendous appeal was that no one controlled it. Ever since the revolution, newsfeed had been the fastest, most reliable way we had of spreading information. Newsfeed wasn't the problem. If people were getting bad information, it was because of how they used it. George apologized, and his voice shook. "You were right. I should never have lost my temper that day. I never thought they could use me against you like this." "It's all right, George. No one can control themselves 24 hours a day." His voice was barely a whisper. "You do." I tried to smile. "No, George. I must try, because there was always somebody watching, but I don't." No one should be expected to live under that kind of scrutiny all the time. I reached out my hand. Consent? He nodded, and I grabbed his left hand in both of mine. George, if that's the price I must pay in order to put America back together again, I'll pay it. None of us are faultless, but there is no one I trust more to have my back through this than you. Thank you. I won't let you down ever again. I smiled. I don't expect you to be perfect, George. I trust you to do the best you can. And your best is pretty damned great. He nodded. I will do better. I know you will. Making mistakes is how we learn. I released his hands. What's next on our agenda? George talked me into releasing my poor dog's medical reports on Newsfeed. I didn't think I should have to, and hadn't wanted to validate the ridiculous accusations by giving a response. I had thought that if I ignored the claims, they would fade away like the trash they were. But it was clear people were taking these allegations seriously. Within minutes, everything I had released recirculated, branded as falsified, or complete fabrications. Even my veterinarian became infamous and had to shut down temporarily. Dog-eared burners burned an effigy in front of her clinic. I didn't see any way back from this. I thought for sure my campaign was done. At least now I could focus all my energy on running Hoosierland, which I had been neglecting far too much since this campaign had begun. George barged into my office without knocking. Great Party invited us back. The directorship is still in our reach. But our poll numbers, our approval numbers are still low, but our recognition numbers are through the roof. There's a chance we can win this. My brow furrowed. Because people recognize us, but don't like us? I guess. Hey, don't question it. We're back on top. I shook my head. On top of something, I guess. If it gets us where we need to go, I guess I'll take it. The next afternoon, we held an outdoor rally in Capital City. Great Party posted armed guards everywhere, but I had nothing to fear this time. My staff and volunteers cheered so loudly that they almost made up for the lack of enthusiasm from the rest of the tiny audience. Everyone but George had come. I'd given him a special mission. I put my hand over my eyes to block the sun and gazed over the empty plaza. I could name almost every member of the audience. They all looked the same and dressed the same. I was touched that they had all come out to support me so vocally, but where were the common people? I must admit that the unconditional cheers and applause felt good, but I missed the passion and the inclusiveness of my earlier rallies. There was no way I could achieve my agenda with only these core supporters backing me. Meanwhile, Betterblog posted Palma's latest rally. Fans screamed so loud that I could barely hear what he was saying. How can I compete against that? I asked. George showed me his own video of the same event from further back. A small group of kids in Palma t-shirts congregated near the stage, cheering. The rest of the chairs remained empty. Where is everyone? I asked. It's just a bunch of better knots. He's in no better shape than me. He's got his core group, but even if one of us wins, how could either of us accomplish anything without bringing the rest of the people along with us? Sloane's haggard face seemed younger, lit by mischievous joy. It's working! He sat at my desk and cast his tablet feed onto my wall monitor. Watch these man-on-the-street interviews! A man paused walking his dog so it could take a dump. Excuse me, sir, an off-camera voice asked. Who do you support in the upcoming election? Well, I don't know. I probably won't even vote this time. I mean, Watkins eats dogs and all, but then Palma's a mime. It's the lesser of two evils, I suppose. Sloane slapped the desk, laughing. A microphone jutted into a young woman's face. The girl tossed her hair back. Well, I'm certainly not voting for a mime.
So you believe the allegations that Counselor Palma is a mime? The interviewer asked.
Oh, yes, she answered. I've seen old vids of mimes. They really exist.
Sloane shot me a broad grin.
But you haven't made me look good, I said. You've just made Palma look bad.
Exactly. Negative news travels faster and farther. But it's not all bad. Freenet reports that every family under your administration will receive a free blue panel solar battery.
My eyes nearly popped from my skull.
Blue panels? Those are the best on the market.
Indeed. They produce an even current, which can't be matched by other brands.
If only I could give away blue panels. Even if they are priced a little higher, they more than make up for the cost in reliability and lower maintenance.
I had a complete blue panel system installed in the chairman's mansion when I was first elected, and it hasn't needed service since.
And I'm sure you enjoy peace of mind knowing you'll always have clean, reliable power, thanks to blue panels.
I do, of course, but there is no way the government could afford to give away solar batteries. What will people say when I can't actually do that?
Simple. If you lose, your supporters will say they all could have had free batteries, but voters backed the wrong candidate. That will set you up for another run. If you win, the official campaign will point out that it never promised free batteries, while your supporters on Newsfeed will blame not getting batteries on better knots in the government blocking you.
Is any of this even really news?
It is now. And speaking of news, I have it on the authority of a certain chef that Counselor Palma doesn't chew his own food.
What?
Why? I don't care about that.
You can bet voters will.
It's not even true.
But it sounds like something that could be true.
It's truthy.
I rose from my desk, shaking my head.
No. 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 This has gone too far.
What do you plan to do? Just let them lie about you and do nothing?
I don't know, but I don't want to win this way. The truth should still mean something.
Sloane grimaced. You live in a fantasy world. The voters aren't even capable of distinguishing what is real.
Do you really think so little of people?
I used to hope citizens would eventually be forced to think critically about what they saw on Newsfeed. I thought the young people coming up would see how ridiculous their parents and grandparents were, but they still just keep repeating crazier and crazier crap. It's different crap, but still crap. Wilma, if you don't use the tools you have, you will lose.
That may be, but at least I'll lose on my terms.
I don't need your approval. I can continue releasing this information without you.
Please, I begged. Don't. The people deserve another chance. Maybe once they've reached a certain crap threshold, they'll finally come back to us.
Sloane's eyes drooped, and his rough voice softened.
I hope you are right, Wilma. I really do. Good luck.
Sloane left. I took a breath and summoned my assistant.
George, call Palma's people. I want to set up a meeting.
Razor wire topped the dirty wall enclosing Palma's mansion. Dead, skeletal trees surrounded the building, and a factory behind it billowed thick gray smoke. While sitting in the car waiting for the gate to creak open, I spotted the words, "Wilma will do it," graffitied on the wall. I smirked, seeing my slogan on Palma's seat of power. Palma's bearded assistant wore a paisley skirt, but Palma himself strutted around the office in a bulky gray suit, the epitome of old-world masculinity. He extended a thick, meaty hand, and I shook it.
"Your tactic may just backfire, Chairman Watkins," Palma said. "It turns out mimes are consistent, loyal voters."
"That may be. I have no problem with mimes."
"Too late to curry their favor now, Watkins."
"We want the same thing, Counselor Palma. We want to unite the provinces,
rebuild the country, help our people live happy, safe, productive lives. He fell into his chair behind the desk and motioned me to take the seat opposite him.
And you think you can do that? My people have looked at your proposals. Your strategy worked great back in your province, but it doesn't scale up.
I surprised both of us by tilting my head back and cackling.
What's so funny?
That's the first time you've criticized my actual plans. It's the first time we've talked about what we really plan to do to make America whole again. I bet you've got some thoughts on how my policies could be modified to work better on a larger scale.
He tapped his pen on the desk.
Maybe. But your great nuts would just tear those ideas down.
Perhaps. But at least then we'd be talking.
Palma, America can't go on like this. Look at the mess outside this window. We could have fixed this country years ago, but instead we argue about all these ridiculous accusations.
It's the nature of the game, Watkins.
We are feeding the people what they want.
They don't want this.
Then why do they keep eating it up? It's the only way to get elected. And once you are in power, you've got to keep people angry at someone else to keep them from being angry at you.
Things will never get better if we keep going on this way.
That may be, but what can we do?
We can stop it, Palma. You and me. The people are hungry for truth. Real truth. We can give it to them if we work together.
Help the enemy?
Help the country. Together. Just on this one thing. Then we can air our real disagreements and talk about actual policy.
That would just smooth the way for someone else to come along and outshovel us.
That's a risk I'm willing to take. I'm gambling on the intelligence and empathy of American citizens. Are you willing to do the same? What do we have to lose?
He studied me and slowly started to nod.
I straightened my skirt and looked out over the huge crowd gathered outside the chairman's mansion. It was the biggest audience I'd ever spoken in front of, even bigger than before the scandals. Effigies burned on the outskirts, but they were like tiny candles in the distance. Flashbacks of violence caused my heart to race. There was no way to control a crowd of this size. The masses hadn't shown up just to hear me. They'd shown up because they smelled blood. Two candidates, myself and Palma, on the same stage. But Palma had yet to show.
"Any word?" I asked.
"I'll call again," George said. "Maybe he got caught in traffic."
Provincial police would have called us the minute he entered Hoosierland. I don't think he's coming.
I checked my watch. 10 minutes past start time.
Wish me luck, George.
You can't go out there alone.
I closed my eyes and took a deep breath.
I can't control Palma or anyone else. I can only control what I do.
This simple statement gave me a sense of resigned calm. I would do what I had set out to do, and the chips would fall where they would. I approached the podium to a mix of cheers and boos.
"In the last few days," I said, "I have watched some old vid streams with mimes in them."
The crowd booed and hissed. I raised my hands to silence them.
"You know, they were kind of fun."
Quiet fell over the audience.
And a lot of mimes went on to do great things. Robin Williams and Charlie Chaplin both got their starts as mimes.
The crowd turned to each other with confused looks. Perhaps my references were too dated. I continued,
"I have no problems with mimes. Some of my best friends have even dabbled in miming."
"Let me speak," I shouted, silencing groans from the audience.
"That being said, I have no evidence that Palma was ever a mime. But even if he was, That shouldn't matter. A lot of ridiculous things have been said about me and about Counselor Palma. That isn't what we should be talking about, people. This election shouldn't be about trying to make one of us look bad. It should be about singling out who is the best candidate to help you and America get where you want to be. George and other loyal supporters cheered from their spots, scattered in the crowd, inspiring a few people around them to cheer as well. "We can rebuild this country," I shouted. "Together, we can make America functional again." I didn't get thunderous applause, but I got applause, and that was something. I outlined what I had done in Hoosierland, and what I intended to do for America if elected. The old video from my original rally played overhead, showing the smiling faces and clean streets of my province. People worked jobs and bought fresh produce. They even went to the doctor. I felt animated and spurred on by an almost supernatural energy. The kind of country you want America to be is up to you. Do you want it to be led by a circus of misinformation and conspiracy theories? Or do you want facts and policy to mean something? Do we want leaders who are experts at name-calling and newsfeed shaming? Or leaders who care about you and America? The choice is yours. I spotted Sloan off to the side. He nodded at me and clapped his hands. When I left the stage, my energy suddenly evaporated, and I nearly collapsed, leaning my weight against a wall. George put a hand on my shoulder. I could see the concern in his eyes. "Palma?" I asked. George showed me his tablet. A still photo of me had been animated into a cartoonish dance. My real voice played over the image. "Things will never get better. Gambling on the intelligence and empathy of American citizens." Then the voice cackled on a loop, and it played again. George's mouth narrowed into a thin line. "PopNet released this onto newsfeed 30 seconds after your talk began." I shook my head. "PopNet might have released it, but the audio is from my meeting in Palma's office. I can clearly hear the skip where he spliced two sentences together out of context. A week ago, I wouldn't have expected such an obvious hack job to gain traction. Now, I don't know what to expect." Sloan stamped his cane on the ground. "He betrayed you." "It's all right," I said. "We did the best we could. The outcome lies in the hands of the voting public, same as it always has." Sociologists have since written detailed analyses of newsfeed viewing patterns after Palma released his graphic, studying when people clicked away from my speech and back again. The dancing image wasn't long and didn't hold attention as well as Palma had intended, but it got millions of repeat viewers after my speech was done. George carved my speech into small bites without altering any of the content so they could be reposted and shared. My supporters claimed Palma's circus-like video proved the points in my speech. Eventually, election day finally came. Better Times blog released video of Palma outside a polling station, holding a puppy and talking about how much he loved dogs. He handed the puppy off to an assistant wearing a plastic-eared hat so Palma could cast a vote for himself. He'd gone all in with the craziness. Again, I repeated my new mantra. The only person who I can control is myself. I held a modest party for my staff and volunteers with sandwiches and cake. Results started trickling in over newsfeed. Some blogs placed Palma ahead by double digits, while others reported the exact opposite results. There was no way to know the real outcome until the official tally was in. There was nothing more to do now but wait. I retreated to my office and fell asleep while my staff and volunteers continued to socialize. George woke me in the dark morning hours. I'm afraid we didn't win. I had expected to be disappointed if I lost, but I mostly felt relieved to have the campaign over with. It was tradition for the losers to raise hell and claim the election results were tainted by fraud, but that was not my way. The people had made their choice. I'll call Palma and congratulate him. Palma didn't win either. I sat straight up. Then who? Sloan pushed his way into my office with a huge grin on his face. I did. I furrowed my brow. How is that even possible? I never saw you listed as a candidate on Newsfeed. Newsfeed only shows you what you are already looking for. If you don't look up from the feeds, you might miss something important. When you decided not to fight back, I couldn't take the chance that you would lose. The stakes were too high. I ran with the endorsement of the Fine Party. But I wanted to run fairly. I wanted to run on truth. And you did. Well, I did. While you and Palma were throwing dirt at each other and alienating voters, I ran a clean campaign under your radar. The exact kind of campaign you would have run if you could have. I even copied segments of your last speech word for word. If it makes you feel any better, you came in a distant second place. You and Palma nearly tied. The two of you gathered up the hardline great nuts and better nots, while the rest of the voters flocked to me. But you were blacklisted. The scandal. Do you even remember what my big scandal was about? I hesitated, still groggy. Something about dolls? They are called action figures. Newsfeed may be forever, but memories are short. And that was over 10 years ago. I'm going to need a good assistant director. Someone I can trust. Someone with the same goals and a proven track record. We have a lot of work to do if we want to create a world where truth can win. But can I trust you? You can keep me honest, and in a few years, we'll do this all again. I'd struggled awfully hard to settle for second place, but I hadn't done this for me. I stood, squaring off with him, and slowly extended my hand. If I worked with Sloan, there was still a chance we could put the shattered pieces of this country together, if we could get enough people on board. Looking back on it now, I'm glad I lost that first campaign for director. I wasn't quite ready yet for the directorship, but I would be. And the world would be ready for me much sooner than any of us had expected. In a world where lies are so plentiful, nothing is more valuable than truth. And one truth we can all agree on, whether great party, better party, or even fine party, is that Blue Panel's brand solar equipment is the best on the market. The first thing we did after the inauguration was have a complete Blue Panel system installed in the off-White House. Your government never shuts down, and you don't have to either, thanks to Blue Panels. Available wherever solar equipment is sold.